Good morning, Your Honors. My name is David Goodnight, and I, along with my colleague, Eric Jarrett, represent the appellants in this matter, and I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal. The trial court erred in its application of collateral estoppel in a number of respects, the first of which is that the arbitrator simply did not decide and could not decide the issue of constructive trust, because the trust property had quite deliberately been removed during the pendency of the arbitration from the jurisdiction of Judge Alsdorf, as he noted. And, you know, what's more than ironic in this case is that Judge Alsdorf made these significant findings and conclusions of a breach of fiduciary duty and all but said he was prepared to impose a constructive trust over the trust property. And to take that ruling and say that we are now estopped from seeking the remedy in trial court that he could not impose is wrong as a matter of law. Secondly, there is a fundamental difference between a claim for constructive trust on the one hand and a claim for money damages. A constructive trust does not require proof of damages or value. It literally arises over the thing itself, over the property itself. So if, for instance, the property is a horse, a racehorse.
Okay, let's go back to your statements about Judge Alsdorf's decision. Judge Alsdorf also said the conclusion is also inescapable that no non-arbitrary value can be established for Sage Carter that can be measurably in excess of the easily ascertained and contractually mandated remedy of disgorgement. Therefore, the only reasonable measure of damages is not a business valuation per se, but a requirement that respondent disgorge 50% of the value he in fact received in 2009 for the business opportunity that he had wrongfully taken at the end of 2008. And Judge Alsdorf goes into considerable analysis as to why that 38% was really not worth anything because of the rights retained by Professor Dr. Cotter. Didn't your client get an opportunity to litigate the value of the 38%? And it, having been found to have no value, the trust remedy makes no sense?
We certainly had an opportunity to litigate the issue of damages, no doubt about that. And Judge Alsdorf found that our proof failed and that damages were speculative for the 38%, no question about that. The question before him, though, was not whether the business opportunity had value. And if you look at the bottom
of page... Well, that was a question because he had the ability to award damages.
Right.
So it was an important thing for him to decide and was necessary to his decision that the other number, the disgorgement, was a complete remedy.
Right. At the bottom of page...
How can you stand there with a straight face and tell us that it wasn't necessary to Judge Alsdorf's decision to decide that the 38% had no value?
Well, he says at the bottom of page 10 that the business opportunity, this is in his final reasoned award, had substantial value, was a valuable business opportunity, and then goes on to say damages were speculative.
Okay, at the bottom of page 10 do you contend say that that has value?
It is four lines up from the bottom. The fact that subsequent events led to the ultimate demise of Sage Carter at the end of 2009, a period of slightly less than a year, does not alter the fact that a valuable business opportunity had been taken by Green,
okay,
by him.
He's not talking just about the 38% there. He's talking about everything that he ultimately requires be disgorged.
Well, the breach of fiduciary duty was taking a valuable business opportunity, and the disgorgement was only for the monies that Green received in 2009. And the constructive trust claim does not require proof of damages. The trust arises over the thing itself.
It's an equitable remedy, so you've got to be doing something fair by imposing it. If your client's already been made whole, what's fair to impose on Professor Cotter, this trust?
Judge Leach, there was no award for the value of the 38% or for the 38% in the trust property.
That's because it didn't have any value, according to Judge Alsdorf, not because Judge Alsdorf didn't have the ability to award damages.
But
he could have awarded damages, couldn't he?
He could have. And if he had, then there would have been a remedy for that.
Did he choose not to award damages?
Certainly.
And the reason he chose not to award damages was because the 38% had not been shown to have economic value. Isn't that correct?
Well, I would say it was because it was the damage proof he found was speculative.
I don't care too much about what you say. What did Judge Alsdorf say was the reason? And that's what we're concerned with.
Well, I believe if you look at pages CP 46 and 47 that he found the damage proof was speculative. But if a constructive...
Isn't that the same as saying you didn't prove what you needed to prove by a preponderance of the evidence?
Sure. But it's not an element of constructive trust.
It's an element of what you did have to prove, though, and that was the measure of your damages.
But the claim that is before the trial court here is a different claim. If a constructive trust arises over the horse, the thing itself, and the horse turns out to be a Derby winner, terrific. If the horse turns up lame and has to be taken out to pasture, then that's what you have. It's not about damages for the horse.
Just because there's a horse, you have to show that it's fair that there be a trust imposed on the horse, correct?
Yeah.
What if the horse has no value, what's fair in imposing a trust on the horse?
Well, the trust, constructive trust, arises in equity as a result of the breach of fiduciary duty.
You can say those words. Tell me what's fair about causing economic harm to someone else when there is no economic benefit shown that you're entitled to.
Well, the party who breached the fiduciary duty here had no right to retain that trust property. It had to be returned to its rightful owner. And if this property had no value...
What you've left out of your story there is there's a third party with legal rights with respect to the horse who exercised those legal rights. That's why the horse wasn't owned by the wrongdoer anymore. So you need to show why it's unfair for the person who exercised his legal rights to retain the value of what he obtained through his legal rights, and you have failed to show that there is any economic loss to your client by failing to show that the 38% had any value.
The claim for an equitable trust is not a claim for value, Your Honor. It's a claim for the thing itself,
literally. It's a claim that you're entitled to something because it's economically unfair to let somebody else keep it. That necessarily takes into account value.
We'll see you in 10 minutes.
Yes.
Good morning, Your Honors. Please, the Court, my name is Bob Sulk, and Tim Fitzgerald, I represent Cotters. At its core, this case involves an effort to avoid the consequences of an arbitration award. That's all this is. And what they're trying to do is to, in a sense, misstate what happened in the record below. For instance, on page 2 of their brief...
Are you referring to the trial court or the arbitration?
I'm now referring to their argument in this court, in the trial court. Okay. They argue that the Cotters gave no consideration in the settlement agreement. In fact, Cotters paid over $300,000 as part of that settlement agreement and gave up claims that they had against Green and others for fraud. Second, on the issue of constructive trust, they avoid the fact that they themselves conceded in briefing in this case, CP 1001-1002, that they're bound by the settlement agreement which released my clients. So not only do you have a situation where there's an arbitration, fully arbitrated, where Judge Alsdorf specifically found that Sage Cotter had no value once given John Cotter's rights. And as you know, John Cotter's rights were, one, to dissolve the corporation for any reason within 5 years. He had that right. And two, the IP, that is, John Cotter himself, which was the value of the company, was his. It could be revoked at any time, which is why Judge Alsdorf found there was no value. They put up an expert witness at that hearing who himself conceded as part of the settlement some of the value received may have been us giving up claims for fraud. He conceded there was payment. And what Judge Alsdorf determined correctly was there was no value. And his claim on the constructive trust, he makes the point that I'm giving you full value and I can't impose a constructive trust, though I'm giving you parallel relief. But let's be clear here.
Let me ask.
Sure.
Judge Alsdorf had the ability, did he not, to award damages if he had considered the 38% to have value?
Absolutely. Without question, which is what the issue was before him. And what Judge Alsdorf said was, look, this has no value. No one will pay anything for it. What I'm going to do is give you 50% of what Mr. Green received while he was working there, which was not an insignificant number, all things considered. So Alsdorf agreed that Green did them wrong. The fiduciary breach was by Green to them, not by my clients, who had absolutely no obligation to them and no relationship with them, didn't even know they were part of the deal. And in fact, had he known they were part of the deal, he would never have done the deal, given their problems with securities law breaches, which was why my client wasn't even told they were part of this deal. And to be very clear, you know, John Cotter is a very well-known, respected professor at Harvard University on the issues of business. That's why they wanted him so bad. He is the hope of the ball game. This was an effort by Mr. Warman and Mr. Van Alstyne to hide their relationship with Green and do a side deal, which is why Cotter was never brought into this in the first place. They had no rights as to Cotter.
In terms of the collateral estoppel argument, if I understand appellant's position correctly, they're saying that the damages is somehow different than the thing itself and that the trial court should have exercised its equitable discretion and imposed a constructive trust on the thing itself. And how does the respondent reply?
I have two responses, Your Honor. One, the thing itself is nothing. That's the problem, because what is there is nothing. They had nothing. And, in fact, the courts, the trial court and Judge Alsdorf said it was one of the most one-sided agreements they'd ever seen. And, of course, it's one-sided because Mr. Cotter had all the leverage because he's the guy. So a constructive trust would have been imposed on nothing, okay? And Mr. Cotter, under the agreement, had the right to do exactly what he did. So another element, for instance, of a constructive trust is an unjust enrichment. There's nothing unjust about Mr. Cotter or Dr. Cotter taking what is his under the agreement and following the agreement to the letter. Indeed, my colleague, Mr. Goodnight, wrote Cotter saying, go ahead and dissolve it. We'll go for damages. I mean, this wasn't there's nothing hidden about this. And so to answer your question more directly is, it's not a horse, because there is no horse here. There was nothing.
Well, if there is a horse, it's a dead horse.
It's a dead horse, exactly. There's just nothing here. And so at the end of the day, what they're trying to do in a back, I don't mean this in a pejorative way, they're trying to get around what Judge Alsdorf found. And I can go through this again and again, but if you don't have any more questions, I'll just sit down and end it here. Thank you, Your Honor.
During arbitration, Judge Alsdorf was told that Cotter had flatly refused to license the intellectual property to Sage Cotter, and he reflects that in his written opinion. We learned in discovery in this case that there was a license in writing for the intellectual property, and it belonged to Sage Cotter. We also got for the first time.
Is that revocable at will by Professor Cotter?
Not necessarily, Your Honor. And we also have.
Everything I've read says that Dr. Cotter reserved the right to revoke the license at any time, and that he also reserved the right to liquidate or terminate this LLC at any time for the first 5 years of its existence.
Well, if you look at the contracts, which Judge Alsdorf didn't have with Westinghouse and NetApp,
in the record before
they are in the record, and I don't believe that's the case. And in addition, as a matter of fact, that's not what he did. He didn't terminate this entity. It went on. And he did not have any right over the 38% that was held in trust for my clients as a result of breach.
How do you respond to counsel's contention that you agreed at the trial court in this proceeding that your clients were bound by the settlement agreement?
That's simply not the case. Certainly.
We just need to look at those pages and see if they say what you said or what you said.
Absolutely. And holding trust property for the benefit of the party who's been aggrieved by breach of fiduciary duty, Green had no authority to do anything with that property. It wasn't his. He's holding the thing for the benefit of the true owner.
Do you have any authority for the proposition that the court should impose a constructive trust on property that has no value?
Harris, Dobbs, Section 4.3, both would indicate that value is simply not an element of a constructive trust. You get whatever the thing is itself.
That assumes some value, and you don't look to the amount. But where there is no value, because frankly, it doesn't make a lot of economic sense to make somebody the beneficiary of nothing.
Well, you know, the problem with that, Your Honor, the policy problem with that is you have a breaching fiduciary duty, a breaching fiduciary, Green in this case, who ends up with 38% of Sage Cotter, which in fact
is required to disgorge it. The party you're trying to impose the trust on did nothing wrong.
They took the property with notice. They were not bona fide purchasers, which really literally is the only defense to this claim.
They exercised legal rights that they had and that you don't dispute that they had.
They have no right to take trust property when they have notice.
Well, it wasn't trust property at that point. It was a claim to which your clients asserted an interest, but no one had established an interest.
In our view, Your Honor, the trust arises as a matter of law when the breach of fiduciary duty occurs, which is in the Hubert case.
Let me just ask this question.
Yeah.
It says that equitable trust is something that arises as a matter of law rather than as a matter of the exercise of the judge's discretion under his equitable powers.
I think the last page of the Hubert case stands for that proposition. I think Harris also supports that. Dobbs supports that.
Okay, supports is different than holds. So I just need to look at the Hubert case.
I would look at the last page of the Hubert case, yes.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Wedbush in Seattle.